Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
One of the silver linings of covering an NCAA tournament regional in a place like Portland is that I get a chance on Press Row to sit alongside some people that I don't get to talk to all year long. Michelle Smith is one of those people, covered women's basketball nationally for 30 years plus at ESPN, The Athletic, San Francisco Chronicle. You can read her work at thenexthoops.com as it pertains to the Sweet 16. She's in Portland where she's got some family ties, and she's joining us now. Hey, so far, can we start with the three-point line? Like, what was your assessment of what went on there?
Oh, gosh, let's start there.
Jump right in.
What a mess. What a mess. That it was discovered by a fan with a high view of the court. I mean, honestly, we didn't see anything. We've been sitting courtside watching games for 4 days, and it wasn't apparent, but it is super obvious when you pull up a little bit and you look from, you know, up top. But, you know, I had – you know, the mental picture of Texas's coach Vic Schaefer and North Carolina State coach Wes Moore just walking it off in their shoes, right, and trying to figure out and measuring tapes. Like, what a mess. It's inexcusable.
Does this happen at a men's event? I mean, is it too much of a stretch to say this wouldn't happen at a men's event, or what do you make of it?
You know, I think that might be a stretch, but I feel like somebody would have noticed before then. I mean, so I don't know that it wouldn't have happened. I just wonder how the sequence of events is different for the women's tournament than it is the men's tournament, and the level of, I guess, detail and attention paid. Because, you know, we got this statement from the NCAA this afternoon on Monday that it was a manufacturing mistake with the company that they used to make the courts, that the measurement was off, that it's been repaired for tonight's game. But, you know, the shooting percentages for those two teams that had to go and play out on that court, you know, they looked to me like they were impacted by shooting at a mismeasured three-point line. And you played five games on that court in that situation. And I think it's just naive to say that it didn't impact the teams that played on the court. And that's a competitive problem, that's a bigger problem.
Yeah, I start thinking about things like spacing, because players get used to using the lines as sort of their markers for, you know, where they're standing on offense and defense. And I start thinking about a lot of little things. And shooters will tell you, you know, if that rim's off by an inch, they know it. Like, they feel it. And so I got to think that they were at least impacted psychologically once they found out that it was that one of the lines was off. Do you think Wes Moore at North Carolina State and Vic Schaefer at Texas, do you think they made the right call, Michelle, in deciding to play, or should they have delayed the game?
You know, what I'm disappointed is that the choice was left to them in the first place. Mm. Everything we heard was that they made a decision to move forward with the game because they could have repainted it, which, A, in that moment, they were going to tape it off. And I don't even think they were going to repaint it. I'm not sure for the players that doesn't add more confusion to the matter when you've got this sort of temporary fix on the court, and that they were going to lose their ABC broadcast window, which, you know, Vic and Wes are guys who've coached in this women's game for a long time. They know how important the network windows are, but it's just, again, it adds to the disappointment that they were put in that position to have to make that choice, because I don't think it was a great choice that they had to make, which is play on this mess of a court and on national television, or postpone it, lose your TV window, have some tape on the court. Like, there were no good choices yesterday.
When I look at this tournament, you know, the women's tournament, I'm far more into it. And part of it is I've got three daughters way into this tournament and eager to see the games that are being played today and tonight. And, you know, they know the players. They know Juju Watkins. They know, you know, they were at the arena rooting for the North Carolina State-Texas game. And, you know, it's their way into it. But give me an idea of someone who's been around the game and seen the evolution of the game. What does it look to you now? What does it look like to you now, Michelle, versus maybe what it was a decade ago?
I think the level, it's hard for me to say the level of play as transcendent and as amazing as, I mean, we've got tonight, you know, you've got Angel Reese, Caitlin Clark, Juju Watkins, and Paige Bueckers all playing on one night in a game that's going to get a lot of attention, that's going to get a lot of eyeballs. And that's the biggest difference for me, is that I think players and programs have been able to, you know, shift narratives, tell their own stories using social media. I think that college basketball, women's college basketball, has become compelling enough to be a point of interest for sponsors, advertisers, and networks, that ABC moves over and takes these games all of a sudden is a big deal. Like, I think the needle's moving on what these women are doing. That being said, I'm also watching my Twitter feed and watching Saturday Night Live, you know, Michael Che on Saturday Night Live take cheap shot jokes at women's basketball still. Like, we've got our foot in both places still from the women's games perspective. There's gigantic growth. There's attention. There are ratings. There are people who are interested in watching these players do things, you know, that people either haven't done for a long time or have never done. And there's still, you know, there's a reason why there's shirts wandering around saying everyone watches women's basketball, because we all know anybody who's covered it for a long time has had their comments filled with, no one cares, no one watches this, why is this in my feed, right? Like, why are you talking to me about women's basketball? No one cares. So I think we still have our foot in both places. But where we are now in the good place is so much better than where we were a decade ago.
At the game on Saturday, I saw Kathy Walker in the crowd. She's a Hall of Famer at Lewis and Clark College, played three sports, and she had glassy eyes. She got choked up. She was looking around saying, look at all the dads, look at all the kids, look at the people who have come to play. She played in empty gyms. Have you heard that narrative from players of yesteryear, or you know, are they looking around going, hey, like nodding, going, hey, everybody, people are starting to get this? Or what do you hear from players?
Yeah, I mean, I think people who have been in the game a long time are glassy-eyed about this. They are looking at this attention. They are looking at this excitement. And, you know, because you can push it into the space, women's basketball. You can push games into a more a space where more people are going to see, but they've got to tune in. They've got to be excited. They've got to be enthusiastic. I think women's college basketball is also benefiting from, you know, some of the things that are hurting men's college basketball. I mean, how many times it's always a comparison, right? Like, I don't know any of the men, I don't know anything about the men's tournament, but I know things about the women's tournament because women's programs have generally been more stable. They've had a chance to build stars and names. I mean, you know, you've got, you know, Bueckers is a fourth-year player who's going to come back another year because she's had knee injuries. Clark is a senior. Angel Reese is a player who's been with LSU now for a couple of years. You know, Juju is the freshman, but I don't see her going anywhere. But you get a chance to build these narratives. So when you put it side by side with the men's game, where programs come and go, players come in and they come out and they leave as soon as they've gotten there, like, there's just been this opportunity, and I think people are really excited. Tar Vanderveer, on the day that she broke Mike Krzyzewski's record, said, you know, I'm a little jealous of what these players get to do. I would have loved to have played during this time. I would have loved to have had the opportunity they have to play, to generate this excitement and things. So I think there's people, longtime people in the game, who are really, really, you know, they're really wistful about this.
In your time at ESPN.com, The Athletic, The Chronicle, the Pac-12, WNBA.com, you've seen a number of players. The talent level in games like today, where you mentioned those four great players, and particularly Caitlin Clark against Angel Reese, I mean, I'm excited to see how this all goes, and I'm excited for the Final Four. But you mentioned, like, you're not ready to say that the talent, like, are you telling me that the players of yesteryear were just as good, but we didn't notice?
I'm telling you that, yeah, I am a little bit. I mean, I'm telling you that, you know, we had national championship games that had Maya Moore and Neko Ogumike in them. We have had Breanna Stewart come through, who's the best player in the world. Brittany Griner's, you know, incomparable career at Baylor. I mean, when Brittany Griner and Skylar Diggins and there were, you know, the big three came out, it was Griner and Diggins and Oh, my God, who was it? Oh, this is embarrassing while we're on live radio. But, you know, but you've got these players that came out, and they were incredible athletes, incredible talents. Diana Taurasi, Sue Bird. I mean, these are some of the greatest players to have ever played women's basketball. And the attention's different, though. The respect is different. And that I really, really, I can see that, and I appreciate it.
Michelle Smith is with us. Look, this Portland Regional, I think people really embraced it who are here in the Portland area. And I think a lot of people came from other cities and got a chance to, got some good weather, got some great basketball. Feels like a big success. I know the organizers are telling me unofficially 15 to 20% better ticket sales than it did in 2019 when Sabrina and Oregon were in the event. So big spike up. But nationally, some chatter about the two-site format not working and Portland and Albany being too small if you're going to do two sites. What's your stance on Portland as a regional host and then a Final Four host in 2030?
I'm excited. I think that this is a market that supports women's sports, supports women's basketball. It has proximity to other really supportive markets. We know Seattle's been such a supportive market with the Storm and even before that with their college teams. You've got the Bay Area market an hour away on a plane. Like, I'm great with Portland. I think it's hard. A lot of the complaining that I've heard, I think, comes from folks who want to see everything just stay in the middle because their fans have a long flight or because they're, you know, because it's a long way for fans of Connecticut to travel to go to Oregon or vice versa. But we've been living, especially at the Final Four, we've been living in Indianapolis and Dallas, and it has been since 1999 since there's been a Final Four on the West Coast. And when Phoenix hosts in a couple of years, that's going to kind of break that run. The West Coast matters in women's basketball, regardless of what happens with the Pac-12. But, you know, it's time that we bring things back to the West Coast. And if people are going to have to travel a little bit, as someone who has been on the West Coast and has always had to travel a long distance to go to Final Fours and to go to, you know, regionals and things. So, I mean, I just don't, I, you know, whether Albany's a big enough city, it's about whether or not the city can handle eight teams and all of their fan bases. And that's what the NCAA is looking at, I think. But I think Portland's going to make a great Final Four city. I think the city's going to embrace. We watched what happened over with the Sports Bra pop-up and Aflac and Together and throwing a big party. I mean, I walked up to go talk to some of the organizers, and there was a line out the door of 40 people waiting to get in, and it was packed. And, you know, you want to go where there's excitement about the game. And I know in Portland there's excitement about the game.
I think the player you were thinking about was Elena Della.
Elena Della Don. Thank you. I know it. That's Google myself.
Yep.
I was having those great moments. But there was a time when it was Diggins and Brenner and Della Don coming out together, and that was viewed as the three to see, right? And so we've had these players. They've been incredible players. I just don't want to misplace, you know, because of our recency bias, whether or not these players are different or better than those players. They're getting more attention for sure. They're benefiting from that attention. They're benefiting from NIL exposure. But, you know, the game has always been really, really.
Should Oregon State fans be worried about losing Scott Ruick?
I think that's a tough one. And if Ruick wasn't an alum, I would say yes. But I think that Ruick is pretty loyal to Oregon State, and maybe he needs more information about how this is all going to go over the next couple of years, because I feel like we still don't know a lot. We know they're going to play in the WCC, but we don't know kind of what's going to happen after that. We don't know how some of these dominoes are going to fall, and you guys have been reporting on this for months, but not yet. I don't know ultimately, but I don't think yet. I think what's more interesting, and I know Scott was really bothered by people asking those kids about whether they were going to stick around, whether they might go into the transfer portal. I thought that Talia von Olhoffen's quote, which is "the grass is greener if you water it," was a great quote. I think I'd be stealing, by the way, because I really, really like that one.
Yeah.
But, you know, does Reagan Beer stay? Does Donovan Hunter stay? Like, if he can keep that team together, because he has some idea of what he can build, even in the current situation, I think he sticks around to see how it goes.
Yeah, and I think the key for me is that it can't be like, hey, this is the forever thing. You've got to be able to sell it to players as, hey, it's going to be 1 year or it's going to be two seasons playing this WCC schedule, but stick with us. And I think you're right about, you know, the culture. It will get a test here. But, you know, Scott Ruick, I think, is equipped, as well equipped as anybody to withstand that, given his ties to the university.
Yeah, and probably better positioned, I hate to say it, than Washington State. Cammie Etheridge doesn't have quite the same longtime ties as Washington State. I don't know that she's going anywhere. I just think up in Pullman they're going to have a harder time, I think, with this transition than Scott might at Oregon State, because he's built such a solid foundation and such culture over there.
Michelle Smith with us. Who do you like? Who's your picks? You know, not knowing the outcome of Iowa-LSU, not knowing what happens with USC and UConn, but who do you like in the championship game in Cleveland?
I like South Carolina in the championship game. Yeah. Unbeaten South Carolina, who have now taken a lot of everybody's best shots in this tournament, including Oregon State, and has proven to be a really tough team. She's got depth that not a lot of teams have. She's got, you know, great guard play with Tahina Pau-Pau, who came over from Oregon. She's got Camila Cardozo. She's got the pieces. And so I think it's going to be South Carolina. If I remember how those brackets line up, it's the winner of I'm trying to figure out who will play them in the national semifinal. But I'm in North Carolina State, and I don't think we'll see them in the championship game. But they were on nobody's radar coming into this tournament. And, you know, and they're on the Final Four. So that's a major props to Westmore and North Carolina State, who will be one of Stanford and Cal's new conference mates next year. So,
yeah, South Carolina will play NC State on one side of the bracket, and then the winner of today's games will play each other. I think it's going to be USC and Iowa. Like, who do you like in Iowa LSU?
I think I like Iowa. I do. I think I like Iowa because I watched, you know, it also depends. I think it's going to depend entirely tonight. Both of these games are going to depend entirely tonight on officiating. I hate to say that, but it's how tight are these games going to be called? And what are those Iowa LSU referees looking out for? I mean, we've already just had, you know, we have poor Hannah Hidalgo at Notre Dame having her nose ring ripped out of her nose with pliers on the sidelines, a nose piercing she'd had in all year. We've seen top players on these top teams go and sit on the benches for a long time because some of these games have been called pretty tightly. I mean, there's a couple of calls against Reagan Beers yesterday that when you look at them online, there was a foul called against her, and she got absolutely bulldozed by a South Carolina player, and the foul got called on her. Like, it's just, I think the whistles are going to determine, but I think if Clark and Reese can stay in the game, I think Iowa wins, and then we'll go tonight, you know, with the late game. I think USC has depth, and they have size, and that's going to pose a problem for UConn, because UConn has a whole lot of kids in street clothes on their bench, and they're playing, you know, they're playing eight, they're mostly playing six players, and I think that USC is going to make it tough.
Michelle Smith, you're the best. I appreciate you, and shout out, you got a kid living in the area. That's awesome. I guess we'll see more of you.
Yep, you're going to see more of me. I got wedding stuff to do. I got to come back and forth for the next few months for sure.
I love that. Michelle Smith, thank you. Have a great game tonight.
Thanks. Talk to you soon. Yep.
Iowa, LSU, USC, UConn. I walked by somebody at the Moda Center on Sunday, and they said, I couldn't tell you the names of five players in the men's side of the bracket. And then they reel off, Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark and Juju Watkins and, of course, the Oregon State players who were playing. And there were a lot of fans at Moda Center wearing Oregon State gear Friday through Sunday, and, of course, tonight, showing a lot of passion and spirit and pride for the Beavers. I want you to leave it here. You got the bald-faced truth statewide.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the bald-faced truth.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald-Faced Truth radio show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald-Faced Truth radio show. Thanks for listening.